Well, as you're no doubt aware, we have a mutual improvement class tonight, and Brother James and Brother Joel are going to talk to us about Rachel and Leah, respectively. Now, no introductory reading has been requested, so without any further ado, and perhaps I should mention at this point, we'll ask for constructive comments after each address. So we'll ask James to come and talk to us now, please, about Rachel.
Well, good evening, everyone. In order to give as broad and yet as interesting a picture as possible of Rachel's life in the time provided, which hopefully I won't exceed, we shall look a little at her family and local environment, the way Jacob and Rachel came to meet, Rachel's relationship with Jacob and the results of it, and finally the future of their offspring. Isaac and Rebekah sent Jacob to Laban in the midst of a family feud which split a family apart. Just like Abraham's first recorded journey, this was a venture into the unknown as a result of trusting obedience. The first sign of a reward was the promise in Genesis 28, verse 14. It's probably a good idea to turn up to Genesis 28 because most of the references will be in that area. Genesis 28, verse 14. The middle of the promise there reads as follows. And thy seed shall be as the dust of the earth, and thou shalt spread abroad to the west, and to the east, and to the north, and to the south. And in thee and in thy seed shall all the families of the earth be blessed. No doubt this uplifted Jacob as he travelled from Bethel, which would become the boundary of the tribal inheritance of Benjamin and Ephraim, two of his descendants by Rachel. Eventually, Jacob reached Haran. One Bible encyclopedia describes Haran as a small village today, but it was probably an important trading city then, established almost since the days just after the flood. It lies on the River Balak, which is a tributary of the River Euphrates. It would have been a long and a dangerous journey from the home of his parents. We can see why Laban would want to settle there. Like Lot in previous years, the commerce must have attracted him and subsequently strengthened the attitude that he had towards his daughters. The attitude to Rachel and Leah that he had was somewhat commercial, and he deceptively sold his daughters according to a business plan with Jacob, which he formulated in return for his cheap labour. Genesis 29, verse 19 records, and Laban said, it is better that I give her to thee than that I should give her to another man. Not just to preserve his family line as best he could through the daughters that he had at that point, but also for financial reasons. It is clear that the only daughter Jacob originally wanted was Rachel. We shall discuss that later. The meeting of Jacob and Rachel is very revealing with regards to that and other characteristics of them. Jacob had to independently, and without servants or any help other than from his faith, check that the local people were the right ones, that they were not hostile, and that they could provide him with information that he needed to find his relatives. He would have remembered that phrase spoken by his God, the same God of his father and his grandfather. I am with thee, he said in Genesis 28, verse 15. So, by God's grace, the local herdsmen greeted him and said that Laban was in good health and that Rachel his daughter cometh with the sheep. If we now turn briefly to Genesis 25, verse 27, we read the following. And the boys grew, and Esau was a cunning hunter, a man of the field, and Jacob was a plain man, dwelling in tents. So Jacob would have felt under pressure to show that he was at home in Rachel's environment as a shepherdess. We should remember that it was usual for both men and women to herd flocks in this area of the world. So Jacob then performed an immense act of strength in doing what the local herdsmen could not do. Turn forward to Genesis 29, verse 8. This records that it was usually a collective effort to open the well that they came across. 29 verse 8. And they said, we cannot until all the flocks be gathered together, until they roll the stone from the well's mouth. then we water the sheep. This is aside from any view that access to the well might have been controlled by Laban. Rachel's name means ewe or sheep, implying a family tradition of sheep farming. But perhaps there is also a hidden meaning there, that one of the local herdsmen did want to marry Rachel, and that they would try to give themselves a good reputation in Laban's eyes by helping her. There is no record of Rachel before Jacob arrived. After the submissive and accepting lifestyle she must have had under Laban, she must have been surprised but delighted to meet someone who would be able to broaden her experiences and horizons. The eagerness of running and telling her father of Jacob's arrival would have been built on by his perception of her. It's quite likely that the description in Genesis 29, verse 17, that she was beautiful and well-favoured, led to the way that Jacob visibly reacted to her. He would have seen that her very existence and also her readiness to marry him was providential. Laban would have seen that Jacob's arrival was both providential and good for his business and family affairs, and Rachel would have seen that God had provided her with a husband, although he was of 77 years of age. His faith in the relationship had, after all, been shown when he met her and knew that God had provided him with the answer to prayer. Genesis 29, verse 11 says, "Jacob kissed Rachel and lifted up his voice and wept." The first 7 years of the life of Rachel with Jacob would have seen them both under her father's control. So throughout this time, she must have longed for the future when she would leave her father, despite the time span seeming like but a few days to Jacob. So they would both have had great joy when Jacob could finally ask Laban for Rachel. And yet the hand of God did not work as they expected, because Jacob, the deceiver, was deceived by Laban at the last moment. Euphoric and quite possibly drunk at the end of a day-long wedding feast, he started his married life with Leah instead. So it's not surprising that he was angry that his 7 years of hard labour were concluded in this way. But he may not have considered that God had planned to start the royal line of the nation of Israel through the children of Leah. I also think it's quite likely that Leah found this as a key shaft of light and a way of hope, as previously she had not found a husband and perhaps wasn't likely to, in the local area, based on worldly characteristics such as her comparative beauty. Both Laban and Leah would have suffered indignation and a loss of reputation if the younger daughter married first. Nevertheless, despite this change and the potential good consequences for Leah and her father, Jacob only wanted Rachel still at this stage, and this did bring difficulties. He could not understand this deception by Laban. We now read Genesis 29, verses 25 to 30, this time from the NIV. 25 to 30. "When morning came, there was Leah. So Jacob said to Laban, 'What is this you have done to me? I served you for Rachel, didn't I? Why have you deceived me?' Laban replied, 'It is not our custom here to give the younger daughter in marriage before the older one. Finish this daughter's bridal week, then we will give you the younger one also, in return for another 7 years of work.' And Jacob did that work. He finished the week with Leah, and then Laban gave him his daughter Rachel to be his wife. Laban gave his servant girl Bilhah to his daughter Rachel as her maidservant. Jacob lay with Rachel also, and he loved Rachel more than Leah. And he worked for Laban another 7 years." The parallel next 7 years were also of hard toil, both literally and emotionally, for Jacob and Rachel after they were married. Whilst Jacob clearly built up skills in keeping animals and thus brought prosperity to his new family, there was still suffering as conflict grew between Rachel and Leah. Rachel was jealous, as although she was most loved, she suffered from being barren. This is part of a recurring theme in the Bible, of course. We think of Hannah as another example, who, whilst favoured the most highly of Elkanah's wives, was unable to conceive and give birth. It's interesting to note that Elkanah was from Ramah, near to Mount Ephraim. Those 7 years of waiting must not only have felt fruitless to Rachel, but also to Jacob, who was not blessed with children from the wife that he loved the most. And Rachel had to be instructed to remember the power of God when she became depressed about this. Genesis 30, verse 1. She said unto Jacob, "Give me children, or else I die." And Jacob's anger was kindled against Rachel, and he said, "Am I in God's stead, who hath withheld thee from the fruit of the womb?" Perhaps the most pressing emotional issue came from watching Leah's children grow up in front of her. And then her handmaid also gave birth instead of her. However, she now knew that this judgment and suffering was part of God's plan. Bilhah, her handmaid, had her first son named by her as Dan, meaning judgment. In study commentaries, it appears that a lot of criticism is made of Rachel's behaviour and some characteristics which she inherited from Laban, but from this naming, we can see that she understood God's control, as well as Jacob did. So, after a long wait, Rachel did give birth to Joseph and gave him this name, which rather ambiguously means to take away, or alternatively, to add. This is indicative of her feelings that God had taken away her shame at not bearing children, but it was also a prayer that God would allow her to have further children, an addition to the family. Joseph would one day be taken away from his brothers and then add to their fortunes. But now the whole family had to leave Laban, which was much harder than they probably anticipated. Jacob wanted to leave with Rachel, as it was promised that she should be given to him. He said in Genesis 30, verse 26, "Give me my wives and my children, for whom I have served thee, and let me go." So Rachel would journey with her newborn son away and into Jacob's country. This was probably in the hope that Laban could not control Rachel's precious and highly valued offspring in his upbringing. Through Jacob's somewhat deceptive and cunning acquisition of Laban's animals, through breeding skills which may have been divinely inspired due to their genetic nature, Rachel then became estranged from her father. God instructed them to leave as Laban turned against them. We read Genesis 31, verses 2 to 9, again from the NIV. 31, verses 2 to 9. "And Jacob noticed that Laban's attitude toward him was not what it had been. Then the Lord said to Jacob, 'Go back to the land of your fathers and to your relatives, and I will be with you.' So Jacob sent word to Rachel and Leah to come out to the fields where his flocks were. He said to them, 'I see that your father's attitude toward me is not what it was before. But the God of my father has been with me. You know that I've worked for your father with all my strength, yet your father has cheated me by changing my wages 10 times. However, God has not allowed him to harm me. If he said, 'The speckled ones will be your wages,' then all the flocks gave birth to speckled young. And if he said, 'The streaked ones will be your wages,' then all the flocks bore streaked young. So God has taken away your father's livestock and has given them to me." And so Jacob left, but we read that Rachel had stolen the images that were not her father's, in Genesis 31, verse 19. Whether this was an act of ensuring further false worship on her part, or if it was a futile attempt to stop the unbelieving Laban's practices, we're not entirely sure, but Jacob stole away with them amongst his family. Rachel was now in peril, showing how it is best to allow God to deal with the unrighteous. This sentiment is reflected in Psalms such as Psalm 79, verse 6, which says, "Pour out thy wrath upon the heathen that have not known thee, and upon the kingdoms that have not called upon thy name." We think of Laban's probable business empire, which had not trusted in God. Jacob did not know initially that Rachel had stolen the household gods, and it was only through her uncleanness that they were hidden and disgraced, meaning she escaped the curse of death which would come upon those who were found to have stolen them. Jacob and Rachel realized that this was the work of God. Otherwise, he would effectively have left Laban empty-handed with no wife. Indeed, he said to Laban, if the God of my father, the God of Abraham, and the fear of Isaac had not been with me, you would surely have sent me away empty-handed. But God has seen my hardship and the toil of my hands, and last night he rebuked you. Genesis 31, verse 42. But he did not just refer to God's rebuke, but the prevention of any slaughter of his wife Rachel. Laban, realizing he could not act, formed a heap with Jacob. This was a sign that the Lord would watch between me and thee when we are absent one from another, verse 49 of that chapter. That Hebrew phrase actually implies death to the parties who cross the boundary marked by the heap. So, effectively, they could never be reconciled. We move on now to the birth of Benjamin and Rachel's death after Jacob's meeting with Esau and conflict on their travels. At Bethel, Rachel remembered the curse she put upon herself as she lay dying, "Give me children, or else I die." Yet her offspring was not named Benoni, as she requested, son of my misfortune, but Benjamin, son of my right hand, a positive indication that the son brought forth in death was a blessing that she and Jacob had called for. We're reminded of the words in Ecclesiastes 9, verses 9 to 10 in the NIV, which say, enjoy life with your wife, whom you love, all the days of this meaningless life that God has given you under the sun, all your meaningless days, for this is your lot in life and your toilsome labour under the sun. Whatever your hand finds to do, do it with all your might, for in the grave where you are going, there is neither working, nor planning, nor knowledge, nor wisdom. And we look at the King James version of Ecclesiastes 10, verse 2, which has a reference to the name of Benjamin. A wise man's heart is at his right hand, but a fool's heart at his left. So, thus concludes the account of the life of Rachel. But just before we conclude this address, let's very briefly, and I mean very briefly, consider a couple of the times Rachel's descendants are mentioned elsewhere in the Bible. Joseph followed on, and he became a ruler over all the land of Egypt, eventually resulting in Israel's continued existence as a nation freed from hunger, albeit in slavery. Saul, a good-looking man, but later prone to spiritual difficulties, was a Benjamite, and he led the first period of kingship, which established a precedent for Israel to have a man as a king. So, through catering for temporary and mortal needs, the basis for the sovereignty and separation of Israel was established through Rachel, if not the actual royal line itself. So, in conclusion, we can see that the whole history of God's people follows a similar pattern to Rachel's life. Waiting, problems in birth, misguided attachments to worldly things, and yet we see that through this, as in her descendants, salvation and a route to establishment of a spiritual nation can be found.